Welcome to the Autistic License Podcast. I'm Leo in London.
I'm Shauna, and I'm in Carrickfergus in Northern Ireland.
We invite you to listen in on our conversations as we experiment with unmasking in an autistic space. We talk about what it means to discover we're autistic as adults, especially with established careers as therapists. We want people to know that autistic therapists exist and to broaden the conversation about neurodiversity. You're so welcome to join us, whoever you are and wherever in the world you are. We hope you'll find something of interest and connection here.
It's Easter Sunday. How are you?
I'm all right. I am actually a little bit queasy because I did just eat a little bit of chocolate. Chocolate bunnies. I ate a little bit too much just now. I didn't eat that much, but it was too much.
So you feel queasy?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. Ooh.
There is something in your voice. I just heard it again.
See, there you go.
It's these super duper headphones that you make me wear these days. It means that I hear even more than I normally hear.
I think that's probably true.
It is. It's really raspy.
Is
there's
it?
There's something going on in your voice.
La 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 la.
There's. Yeah, no, there is. There's something going on there. Actually, I had a feeling that something was happening at the top right of my throat. And I felt it last night. And then I felt it again today a couple of times. And you know, like just that autistic thing where you feel everything.
Yes.
Like, so there's something going on, but it might be just that I'm fighting something off, or it might be that I'm in the process of getting something. I don't think I am. I think it would have broken by now. But sometimes you can just be aware of everything.
Just used a little bit of language that I've never used and I've never heard anybody use, but I relate to it right away, which is the top right of my throat, you said. Not my throat. No, I know exactly what you're pointing on the video. That'll be a nice still. That's really interesting because I know what you mean when you say that. I think I could identify a particular feeling, but I don't think that's normal, do you? That people could say the top right of my throat and know and kind of be that specific about where a discomfort, internal discomfort was.
Well,
is this a hypersensitivity?
I don't know. I think I was just meaning to make the point that we feel everything. So I guess that follows. I don't know that saying top right is particularly autistic, but maybe it is. I don't know.
It's a sensitivity. It's a very specific sensitivity.
What do normal people do? We always ask that question. Might as well be on my t-shirts every day. What do normal people do?
What do normal people do?
What do normal people do?
Oh, I quite like that as a slogan. I just want to check with something. Is the light that I'm seeing reflected on you the last remains of daylight? It is, isn't it? I can see the reflection, I think.
Because
it's absolutely pitch black here.
There's
quite a difference.
No, it's light here.
Yeah, that's the east-west difference. That's all it is. Mm. That's quite amazing that it's that dramatic.
I know I'm sitting in the sunroom and looking out to the sea and I can see everything.
Yeah. I don't know why I find that exciting. Oh, there's a weekend thing. I know this is a sidebar, but we did both mention it. I just mentioned it in a post I just put up on our Facebook page.
Okay.
And then I remember you mentioned it to me in a message a couple of days ago about the clocks changing. Oh, it was yesterday, actually, about the clocks changing, because we've just gone into British summertime in the early hours of this morning.
Yeah.
And that's like the daylight thing that I just noticed there, there is something exciting about that and it never goes away.
Okay.
I don't know about, I'm not speaking for anybody else here, definitely not, other than me. And, you know, this is like, I remember somebody talking about stand-up comedy, you know, being a very dangerous thing because you might say, isn't it funny when, and then you say a thing and it's only you, nobody else gets it. This is kind of, this feels similar to that.
where as a kid, you know, it was really exciting that the clocks changed. I would stay up late. And of course, nothing was digital because I'm really old. And so, you know, there was the thing of having to put every clock and watch and thing back an hour or forward an hour. And even I can remember now, you can... Nobody needs this anymore, and I imagine it still exists, but you used to dial 123 on the telephone and you would get the speaking clock, which would give you, so if you needed to know to the second what the time was, really, like really accurately, you had the pips going on the hour on the BBC radio, or you could dial Tim, it was called Tim, so the time, by dialing 123. And I used to love ringing it up at the stroke of 2, 1 o'clock, whenever it was, when the actual clocks changed, to see if it broke or if it was going to do something special. And of course it didn't. And actually, quite often, I can remember it was engaged. You get the engaged signal because loads of people were doing exactly what I was doing. There's a little bit of confirmation, actually, that it isn't just me that gets excited by... What is it? It's excited by something to... It's all to do with... It's to do with patterns. It's to do with like infrastructure, which I think somehow I'm interested in very specific ways. And I'm trying to think of, I think there are other equivalents that give me similar thrills that are to do with an unusual thing happening, but in a very, very predictable and set out way. And you, I think, were talking about you and Lana kind of working out what times things would be the next day because the clocks had gone forward an hour and like working out the patterns.
Well, what happens is you can probably see behind me, like my clock will not be changed. It'll still say whatever the time is.
Yes, it does.
And that'll not be changed for a long time. So Ricky did change some clocks today because he said, Shauna, you'll never change them. Like, which I don't. I can't. That is just one of those jobs that I just will never motivate myself to do. But what I do is... As soon as I don't think I even realised the clocks were going forward. I can't remember when I realised the clocks were going forward. Well, I know somebody, I think somebody said it in my book club on Friday night, and I really thought, I really did not see that coming. So then the next day, which was yesterday, I was always imagining. So I think the thing that I sent to you was because I kept saying to Lana, it's really 9, it's really 10, it's really 11. You know, because I go ahead of the game. I didn't even know that it changed between 2 and 3 until you told me. And you said, oh, it doesn't actually change till 2 or 3. But that's totally immaterial to me because in my head, it's already going forward because it needs to already go forward. Doesn't mean that my clocks need to go forward. As I said, my clocks might never go forward.
Oh, they
but
will.
In my head, are you going to change?
Oh, yes.
You can come and change the ones that Ricky doesn't change because I will not change any of them. Uh-huh. And the car one will stay, will just stay, unless you can work out how to change it. And it's very, very hard to change. So anyway, what happened then, Lana said to me, what time do I have to go to sleep? Because we have this thing where she is currently allowing me to guide her with her bedtimes, but she's off on holidays and it was a Saturday night. So I said half one. And then what happened? I don't think she realised the exact times that the clocks changed. And I think you had said, I don't know what you said to me. I think you might have said to me between 2 and 3. But anyway, what actually happened was she went on her phone at like 1 o'clock thinking she still had half an hour left because she always texts me good night, sweet dreams and hearts and bit emojis or whatever it is that she's going to send me. And she went on to text her and the clock changed. And so she was like, oh shit, I'm late. I was meant to be half one and it's actually 2 o'clock.
Exactly.
And actually I thought it was half an hour early.
That was it, because they change at what would have been 1 a.m. So at 1 a.m. it either goes back to midnight or it goes forward to 2 o'clock. So you never get the 1 a.m.
So and, she never got to 1:30. Oh, so she had, but actually, right. It was okay. I did believe her, and she never would get in trouble for anything like that. But she thought it was so cool that she actually then saw it because she happened to be on her phone watching it. That would not really do anything for me. It's the same as like the clocks at midnight on New Year's Eve or anything like that. Mm. Like, just doesn't mean anything at all. Like, I would, just. Nothing.
We're very different like that, because I just love meaning, you know, because it's totally arbitrary, totally accept that. In fact, I'm against British summertime. I don't think we should be doing it. It's the reasons for doing it don't exist anymore. And it's ridiculous, and it causes problems.
What are the reasons?
Well, there's something about it used to be that. What it's ended up is, this is my understanding, I need to look this up and fact check this and then do a voiceover if I'm wrong, but it's to do with productivity. I think it started with the farming community, and it's basically to do with getting the maximum daylight hours available for work. So it's an entirely capitalist manipulation of time, and not all countries do it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, some countries obviously nearer the equator, there's not much in summer and winter anyway, but it's basically to get as much daylight hours within working hours as possible for the majority of people. But it means that, well, winter would be Greenwich Mean Time. I can't remember what the argument is for which one we should stick with.
Okay.
But what you were saying before about being ahead of the game.
Yeah.
So I don't do that in terms of thinking about... Yeah, I don't think about, oh, I need to go to bed for blah, 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 because that's why they change the clocks on Saturday night, because the majority of people, it's their weekend. It doesn't affect getting up for work. Again, nice capitalist manipulation of time. And
it doesn't apply to autistic people anyway, because we get up whenever we please.
Correct. As long as we can. Actually, that's definitely a little bookmark, isn't it? Sleep and patterns. We have mentioned it before, but I really think that is worth coming back to. Because I can think about how now I understand. It's, again, one of those reframing things where I can understand why it was so difficult managing sleep before knowing that I have a weird-ass clock in my head. But what you were saying there about being ahead and thinking ahead of when the clocks change, I don't do that, but I absolutely... that where it does mess me up is flying across time zones, and that I will tune into before I even leave for the airport. So whenever the journey kind of officially starts, whether that's getting in the car or the taxi to drive to the airport, that's when I put my watch forward to or back to wherever I'm going to, and start kind of living in that time zone way before I get there. And that kind of helps, because that, now that's interesting, isn't it? That's just as predictable. It's just as exciting. In fact, it's more exciting because it's to do with, you know, traveling and being on holiday potentially, if that excites one. And it's, and as I say, it's predictable and all of that, but it's far more disruptive or disturbing somehow than the clocks changing in your own home.
And I think I would be quite resist. I would go the other way if I was traveling, but that's because it's not attractive to me in any way to travel across a time zone. So if I was doing it, I can imagine being like, yeah, but it's not really that time. And like spending the whole time being like, no, but my time is the real time. So it's really not 5 hours ahead or whatever it is that you're wherever you're going. I'd be like, but it's really not. It's really only this time. It's really only this time. There would be something that would make me resist that for a long time.
Well, that you just nailed something I was trying to put together in my head, but I think you're probably right that the reason that it's more disturbing somehow, apart from circadian rhythms and all the things that get messed up because you go across time zones suddenly, but also it is that whole experience of going across time zones is surrounded by going away from home, going away from the familiar and the routines and all of that, which, you know, because ADHD versus autism, I get excited by travel. I do like newness and novelty. At the same time, I really hunger for routine and sameness. So there is inbuilt, maybe it's not to do with anything to do with kind of managing the time, but I suppose to adjust the clocks in my head when I travel is something of minimizing change and difference and disruption in that way.
Yes. Yeah. I quite like I'm not sure that I would get rid of the changes, because I don't think that for me, I mean, even if it is for most people about productivity, I'm only thinking about me. I think I quite like the fact that it's lighter in the evenings, you know, like that kind of suits. It's nice that it's...
It might be that that's the one that campaigners want to keep, actually. I can't remember which way round it works. I remember an argument in the media, probably like in the 80s or something, that, you know, most crimes against the person happen at the end of the day, not the beginning of the day, and therefore you want to maximise daylight then, and that it's a problem that when we put the clocks back to Greenwich Mean Time, it's suddenly darker.
It gets really dark.
Very early, and that's dangerous, or that, you know, there's a higher prevalence of crime.
Yeah, let's not put them back then.
Yeah, I think that might have been the argument.
We don't need to put them back at all. But then does that mean it's really dark too long
then
in the morning?
Then you come back to the agricultural argument for farmers, agricultural workers who work very, very early in the morning, that it then doesn't get light and they lose. Because also, of course, agricultural workers aren't working in street, you know, there isn't the same artificial light.
Okay.
Or traditionally wasn't. That's probably different now. I don't know.
Oh, but it's interesting, isn't it? But it wouldn't be just agricultural workers. So a lot of people wouldn't like to go. Well, you don't like to go to work anywhere. You don't like to leave the house when it's dark in the morning either.
But there's your choice. Do you want to go to work in the dark, or do you want to come home in the dark?
Well, I only go out of my own house into the cabin. It really bothers me,
yes,
to be fair.
You at least transfer from one building to another, even though it's only about 2 yards away. I don't even do that. I don't even go downstairs to street level to start my day.
Well, you do whenever you take the dogs out.
That's very, that's true.
And I guess that is in the dark a lot of the time anyway.
It is. And again, see, I quite enjoy that.
You don't mind.
Because
that.
I've got special torches for the job that I quite enjoy playing with. And now we're back to our Christmas episode of me operating a spotlight torch for my sister while she did a ballet.
Oh, that's
dancing.
Right. That's where your mind is.
So I'm a very good ballet spot operator.
Yeah, I could have done with one of your super duper torches today, because I was clearing out the cupboard under the stairs and I just couldn't see things well enough. And I was thinking, if I had a super duper torch, I need to get a torch.
They're very easy to get hold of. Yeah. I could even bring you one. That
well, if you've got multiple, which
of
you probably
do
have multiple,
do.
Right, we'll stick one in your backpack then and bring me. I don't need anything fancy, really. I said super duper. I just need a torch.
Yes.
Just a torch. Yes. Any torch will do.
I only have super duper ones, of course, but you needn't worry yourself about the fanciness.
Right. And if you could also put on the record that you need to bring me new loopy things for my ears.
They're right behind me right now. In fact, while you're on, I'll bring them down.
Because I actually, when Lana and I went to the cinema this week, I was wearing the loops, and actually they were good. Oh, brilliant. Okay.
So these are loops, these are the flares, and I've even got some called... Sorry.
Don't bring me any more loops. Sure,
no more
I already
loops.
Tried the loops.
Loops are done.
You
just need the flares. Not the flares. These ones are the ones I brought last time with metal in them, and that was totally pointless.
No, crap. Yeah.
So these, I'll bring.
Sorry if anybody's listening in love.
Actually, so there's another. I'm going to bookmark that one again.
No, just talk about it now.
Okay.
Because Leo knows all about these things.
Well, I've just got preferences. That's all. It's all it's going to be is preference. So I will never say you should do this because it's what I do, because you know that's no good. But I can talk about options, and this is a debate. This comes up probably, I would say, once or twice a week in some autism forum somewhere, where somebody says, either I'm looking for noise cancelling headphones, which are the best ones, what do you all use, or I'm looking for earplugs. And people normally mention the brand name Loops because they seem to be kind of the most popular. And so when I first realised that... okay, so here we go again. Leo does the backstory part and too much
you
detail.
Need to do a backstory, because I've just said something with no backstory. So
okay,
it's complimentary
so
if you do some backstory.
Thank you. Let's call it context. So
context.
My first, in fact, this is a, yeah, this is part of my own autistic story, actually. It was the first glimpse into it, really, was several years ago. I did the 23andMe thing of having, you know, my genes mapped and all of that. And that was, that's interesting.
But not everybody knows what that even is.
Okay, so you can send off a bit of your spit to a lab and they will sequence your genes for you. And then they'll tell you all the people in the world who've done the same thing who happen now to be your eighth cousin or something like that. But they can also, there are health kind of, there are general health markers that you can also have. You might be particularly susceptible to this and that. Now, because they've got this giant, partly scary database of people's genes, gene sequences, then what they got, though, is a great basis for some research. So if you want to, and you've had this done, you can do this great big load of questionnaires. In fact, it can be ongoing. And they'll ask you some really, really specific questions. They're not all health related. It might be, do you prefer, does this smell particularly bother you? Or things like that.
Okay.
Because, of course, if enough people with similar gene sequence, you know, bits of their genomes answer the questions, you know, the same consistently, then they'll start to say, ah, there must be a genetic component to this.
Okay.
Which we now know, you know, in neurodivergence is the case.
Yeah.
One of the questions I was asked was so specific and so specifically worded. It was the first thing that really woke me up to the real possibility of neurodivergence, which was, do certain noises, particularly, for example, people eating, put you into a rage? It didn't. It didn't say, do you really not like this, or does it? It said very specifically, does it put you into a rage? It make you really, really angry, and it does, really does. It's a fight or flight thing. It really is. There are, and it's only certain particular noises, and it's only certain particular people. And I find that it's some people seem to have some kind of jaw that amplifies the sound a little bit more. But when I hear that noise, I either want to run away or I want to start smashing things up. And I've never done it, of course. But it was very, very helpful on two counts. So on one count, I found out that it's got a name, misophonia. So misophonia is a very high sensitivity to certain noises that will trigger fight or flight, basically. Very pretty common. It's certainly a big neurodivergence-related experience. And it really helped that I knew that it was a thing. Again, it wasn't the stop making such a fuss syndrome, which we talked about a lot recently. It was a brain thing. The feeling that I was experiencing was real. Mm-hmm. And that actually dialed it down a little bit, knowing that it was, you know, again, not something I had to manage emotionally.
Yeah.
But I do have to manage it aurally. So, and this is where loops, flare audios, different kinds of very specific earplugs come in, and why a lot of neurodivergent, a lot of autistic people carry these and use them, or noise cancelling headphones, not necessarily because of misophonia specifically, but because of a great sensitivity to noise, to background noise, to overstimulation from lots of different noise. You know, how do I get rid of this? I suppose I could put links in the description for products. I don't know if I will, but there's a particular, there are two or three really popular models of noise cancelling headphones that loads of autistic people have. I have one of them, and I use them every time I fly. And then you've got earplugs, so stuff to put in your ear that will reduce noise. Now, you can just have an earplug. So I've got a set here called Vibes. I think these are just earplugs because they're not. They got a hole through the middle. Maybe they have. Earplugs are just plug the noise. You hear less. Everything is turned down. That's not very useful for me because I don't want to not hear. I just want certain frequencies adjusted. So I've talked on here, I know, more than once about the experience of being at a big wedding or something like that. And I can hear, you know, 150 individual conversations at the same time, rather than just background noise.
Yeah.
So there are things, the product I use mostly are Flare Audios, and these are soft silicone earplugs, but they've got a hole through the middle, so they don't stop sound. But what they do is they just shave the top frequencies, the treble, off. Mm-hmm. And that's just about enough for me. Then I can tolerate being in a big crowded ballroom with lots of people talking, or sitting around a table with other people eating if there's a particularly crunchy mm-hmm. person there who otherwise would put me mm-hmm. into the special misophonia rage. It takes just the edge off that.
Yeah.
So there's the background and my history with it, which mm-hmm. is all just in the last couple of years. And so, as I was saying before, what you get online in the autism forums are people looking for recommendations and what do people recommend. And most people seem to, just anecdotally, like loops. Mm-hmm. I'm holding one of my pairs here. And these are small plastic rings off of which is, you know, a silicone earbud. I'm going to put one on. I'm going to take my headphones off. Put one on. The small plastic ring is to hold it inside your ear. Yeah, see, these just block sound completely, really.
Well, they don't block sound completely for me. Because okay. whenever I tried, or because I tried several that you had with you, and I yeah. thought that they were the best. And then I practiced wearing them, and they gave me like this sensation of like a bubble, or like my ear was about to pop. So I didn't really, really like them. But then I decided to take them with me to the cinema this week because I thought, even if there's a bubble or a pop, I'll still like that better than the cinema, because the cinema is always too loud for me. And I did like it so much better, even though I did have the same sensation of the bubble. Maybe it was just because it was a long time of wearing them and I was able to sometimes forget that I was wearing them, but it was definitely way, way, way more pleasant. And I didn't come out feeling like I had just been assaulted with the sound the way I normally do in a cinema. So there were definitely, it was definitely a positive for me to have them rather than not have them. But I don't like the sensory feeling of the bubble. I would like to find something that doesn't give me that bubble kind of feeling.
Now, when you say bubble, do you mean in terms of hearing that it sounds like there's a bubble, or the actual physical sensation of the plastic?
Physical.
Because I can't remember if I brought these for you to try that time when we tried all the ones out, but there's these other kinds of loops where the ring is actually silicone too. I think these are designed for you to wear at night, so that the actual circle bit, the polo mint looking bit, is squidgy too.
I'd say I don't think it's having the plastic loop in my ear. I don't think that that's an issue, actually, really. But you know the way I don't even like having these on my ears, or I don't like any.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like anything round there.
Yes.
But it's not so much that feeling of feeling the thing in my ear. I don't actually feel them in my ear. It's more like an inside feeling, like when you're on a plane and it's about to pop.
Yeah,
but that's what
exactly
I mean by
a
bubble.
Yeah,
it's
something like that. So it's a pressure,
like
internal.
Yeah. It's like as if you just want to put your finger in and, you know, clear it.
Yeah, yes.
That's the thing. That's what it is doing. But it does take, like, some of the ones that I tried on of yours, like, and then you did that test where you played the sound, and I said it, like, it hardly changes it at all for me.
That was really, I remember that. So what I did, listeners, I found YouTube videos of crowd noise in a pub, crowd noise in a, you know, whatever, and played that fairly loud so that we could try all these different models of earplugs. Mm-hmm. We should have made a video of that, actually. We really should have. They should have done a YouTube video for that, because that would have been
me going, that doesn't make
any difference. And that was really amazing. So because to me, it made us, the differences are subtle. These aren't earplugs that block out all sound. But to you were saying, no difference. I hear exactly what I was hearing before. Mm. But that brings, so that's a different sensitivity, obviously, between us. Mm. And here we get to the, you know, this is the big problem when you're trying to solve these problems for people who are highly sensitive, is that the thing that they're sensitive to needs adapting, and if it's being adapted by another sensory thing, like putting something in or over your ears, that replaces, hopefully replaces, not adds to, one sensory discomfort with another.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and I know just from experience I did not like loops or flare audios or noise cancelling headphones actually at all for a long time. But I also knew that I need that I would eventually get used to it. Because I mean, that's just about me. That's not about, you know, you should get used to it. You might not. But I know enough about myself that if I persist with something uncomfortable, I can make then a value judgment about whether it's worth sticking with for the discomfort that it gets rid of.
Yes. And maybe by having them in for a prolonged period of time in the cinema, that's what happened, and I got the overall effect. Whereas maybe just trying them for like 30 seconds doesn't give me that. And like I tried them before when I was hoovering, and I just ended up taking them out, and I thought, I don't like this sensation, I'll cope with the hoover. But then the hoover wasn't on for a very long period of time. So maybe if I had to live in that environment or be out in that environment for a long time of that kind of noise, then it would be a small price to pay. You know, the same as, like, some people complain about glasses, and of course I never complain about glasses because I've worn them for decades and decades and decades. But maybe if someone suggested that I put something else on my face that I'm not used to, or suggest that I wear heavier ones, maybe I, you know, I'd have to get used to something that I would say that I don't like, but actually the benefits would outweigh the drawbacks. So maybe a lot, there's lots of things that are like that.
There are, and you've made me think there about a crossover of two things. I can hear my voice is a bit raspy.
it is raspy. It is.
More water. Combination, so there is a crossover of two autistic experiences. One, and I know these will be, you'll nod along, I'm sure, when I describe myself in this way, but like being an archivist or a collector, you know, amassing lots of the same things. Mm-hmm. And headphones is, as you know, is one of them.
Yes.
and I've always framed it as this perfectionist thing. I'm looking for the perfect pair of headphones. But really, what I'm looking for is this probably kind of unicornish rarity of something that works exactly as I need it to work and is really comfortable or is not going to disturb me sensorily. And so headphones is a great example of that, because for them to really work, they need to be heavy-ish and quite tight. You know, they need to form a good seal. They need then, and they need enough soundproofing to work. But that means they're going to clamp to your head. And if that's unpleasant or you're not used to it, you're never going to find the solution. And that is actually where a lot of these forum discussions about earplugs that I was talking about before, you get so much of that in the comments. Somebody will ask for a recommendation. People will recommend the things that they get on with okay. But then loads of other people say, yeah, but they're so uncomfortable. And, you know, it's very difficult. I'm lucky in this respect, I think, that I know that I can put up with a certain amount of discomfort because I'm fairly confident usually that I will get used to the thing and that the discomfort will be outweighed by the benefit. But it is quite a struggle to impose physical, particularly, you know, discomfort on yourself to relieve a sensory discomfort. I think that feels unbalanced. I think actually, as I say that, that's a bit of conditioning, isn't it? That physical pain, that's worth taking seriously. But I don't like this noise is me making a fuss. And therefore, I'm coming up with this. Yeah, I don't know how to formulate this. But, you know, these solutions that we're talking about in terms of hearing at the moment, for example, are physical solutions that cause a physical discomfort, and we're less tolerant of that than we are the sensory discomfort that they alleviate. And I wonder if that is a social conditioning thing, that physical discomfort has a higher value.
And maybe it does. I don't know if it is a conditioning, or is it just like a decision as well? Like, would I decide myself that I don't want physical, I don't want my body to be physically uncomfortable, and yet the sound is outside of my body, so it's not torturing me so much,
no,
you know,
right.
So it doesn't feel like it's encroaching. Like if I put something on my head and it hurts, then it's like, well, why would I cause that to myself? Whereas if I go into an environment and the environment does that, well, then I either put up with it or I leave the environment. Now, I understand that there's times whenever I want to be in the environment, but then maybe in my mind, without consciously thinking, there is what you've just said, some kind of a thing. Yeah, but Shauna, you don't want to actually impose something on yourself. Mm-hmm. So you just grit your teeth and get through, because at least you still have your physical integrity. You still get to wear what you want in your body. No, you're right.
I think that's worth more. I'm actually more convinced by your take on this than mine, that the sensory disturbances, excluding tinnitus, which I have, which I do carry with me, are external. And I mean, you could move away from them if you, generally speaking, not necessarily, but you might be able to. Whereas, the physical discomfort doesn't matter where you go, there you are, and it's going to be with you, potentially. That, for me, is very convincing, actually. As a kind of a ramping up of the discomfort.
It's not even that it necessarily is more uncomfortable. It's more a non-mindful, not conscious belief that comes from something else entirely. So I wonder if at some point in my, because what I've just described there sounds like a child thought process. So it sounds like all I have is the autonomy of my own body, and I'm not going to put something on it that causes discomfort, because that would be me doing something and I have very little control over my world. But what I do have control over is what I wear, what I put on my body. And if you extrapolate from that, if you have a very simple cause and effect or a very simple thought process around that, then it comes into a belief of, I will not put something on my body that is scratchy or itchy or irritating or squishy or whatever words you think. Mm-hmm. So I don't want a plastic thing pushing my ears. I don't want this. I don't want that, you know. So every time, if I have earrings on and I put these headphones on, I'm like, fuck that, you know, I want the earrings, I don't want that. I have to take the earrings out, which are my autonomy, which is my choice, which don't hurt my ears. And then I have to put this on, which does all of the above. Yes. And that insults my sense of autonomy over my physical body.
That's a great phrase.
You know, whereas going into an environment is not something I do to myself. It is, but you know what I mean. It's not something I do to myself. I didn't create that.
No, exactly. It's not part of you. It's an environment you've immersed yourself in willingly or not. You know. Yes, that's right.
Yeah, but it's not me that's making the noise.
No, but
not me that's assaulting my very self.
And I totally, again, I totally agree with that take on it. That totally resonates. But that's against the things that you do to yourself that are more comfortable than if somebody else were doing exactly the same thing to you. And the example, so there's less anxiety around, say, a physical discomfort if you're doing it, A, for a reason, and B, to yourself on purpose. My example of that, I can't remember if I've said this on the podcast before or not, but I've always had this in my mind since a kid, was the new pair of shoes thing.
I know it. I don't know if you said it too. I know all your stories.
I know you do already. It didn't take long, did it?
I don't know if you said it on the podcast or not. In the old days,
in the 1970s, you'd get a new pair of shoes as a kid and they would hurt for a few days. You'd had to break them in. Oh, this was a recent, this is something that we just haven't put out yet, actually. This was a recent.
Is it?
I think so. But the point is, a new pair of shoes would hurt. They would take time to soften and get broken in. And in that time, they would rub against the back of your heel and they could take all the skin off in a day and leave you red raw, and you'd need plasters and ointment and stuff. And it was painful. It was uncomfortable. But because it was being done to me by me, it was tolerable. But if somebody held me down and got a piece of hard leather and just rubbed it against my heel for 8 hours until all the skin was off and my flesh was raw, I'd be screaming and, you know, begging for mercy. It'd be actual torture.
Yes.
And yes, it's the agency that you have when you're kind of doing it to yourself, which obviously takes away a lot of the unpredictability and also ill intent that you would feel if somebody was doing it to you, and the anxiety. So you're just left with the physical discomfort. It's just somehow easier to... Yeah.
But as a child, I can imagine, though, I would still feel that was being done to me if someone told me that I had to wear my shoes in.
Yes, yes.
Because I might not want new shoes. And I think there's some, people...
You're taking this to another level. This is great.
But I think, like, some people are willing to do things like that for themselves in the name of... fashion.
Yes.
Some women absolutely will wear high heels and do that to themselves because of something. Yes. You know, you will go through having a tattoo because you wanted the end result.
Yes.
I don't think I would do things like that. I think that that might tie into that same belief that I'm kind of illuminating for myself around, why would I do something that makes my body feel not good, even if it had an outcome that I wanted?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I would go through that. It's probably why I've never got fit or trained for anything. Or, like, it just doesn't do anything for me.
Mm-hmm.
It has to just not be sore or not. Like, that seems to be a really big block when I'm thinking about it and talking about it. Can't imagine going through anything like that. Can't imagine, like, dieting to get, like, just no. What I eat, what I want to eat. You know, there's something really strong around autonomy and comfort. I won't eat things I don't like just because they're good for me.
Mm.
Like, I just won't do it.
Mm.
Just won't put myself through a sensory discomfort or a physical discomfort.
Yeah. And I would agree. And we've talked before on the podcast that I, for most of my adult life, was extremely overweight, and I had surgery to correct that, not for aesthetic reasons, but for medical reasons. And the only thing in terms of, so obviously dieting was an issue for me, and anyway, it doesn't work. I mean, I think that's not a controversial statement anymore. But yeah, the fitness thing, definitely. I mean, that's something else that would just make me angry, would be somebody telling me to do more, whatever the thing is, whether it's in the gym. The only time that's ever worked for me was the Couch to 5K program, which I did follow. Once I had lost weight and I could kind of run a little bit, so I needed a great deal of help to even get on that, into that process in the first place. But the reason that that worked for me was because you start with something completely meaningless, really. Which is, you know, I don't remember what the sequence is. Maybe it's run for 30 seconds, walk for 5 minutes. I don't know what but it's kind of, well, if you do that, that's not going to make any difference. That's not the point. You're being given something that you definitely can do with no discomfort. And then it really slowly ramps up and you decide when to move on to the next kind of stage where you run for a little bit longer. And that's the only kind of attitude toward that kind of pushing yourself that was ever going
to
work for me.
Somebody's telling you what to do. That's
well,
what
I mean, actually,
up.
You do have a coach in your ear because you can download an app. But again, it's not a bullying thing. It's not push through the pain and, you know, all of this. It just that which doesn't work for anybody with any kind of physical sensitivity to discomfort. That, you know, dialed up. Everybody has physical sensitivity to discomfort, but a particularly dialed up one.
Yes, but it's so many more things than that. By the way, it's really pitch black here now, and it has been pitch black for quite a while, and I've been just wondering how long it was in that change.
Well, that was about 3/4 of an hour.
I know, but it's been like that for a wee while.
I shall at some point look up the differences in sunset times between us.
Yeah, well, maybe it'll even show on the Zoom, like, if I got darker. It will, darker,
yes,
and darker.
Actually, yes.
Because you can see there's in like an airplane in the sky now, and it's, uh-huh. you can see the lights, but I can't see anything else. I can see the lights across the loch, but you know, still, it's very, very different than it was whenever you asked me. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm thinking about the sensory aspects of that, which often of exercise and diet and stuff, which often don't get taught about, because like when you exercise, you sweat. And I cannot abide the feeling of sweat on my body. Mm-hmm. And that's an autistic thing. You know, it's not just a something that happens to everybody when they exercise. Like, from an autistic point of view, it makes my skin crawl. You know, cannot abide it. You know, it's like you have to go swimming and you have to cope with the smell of the chlorine. You have to cope with all of the changes of the heat and the cold and the water and mm-hmm. the wet and the, you know, like there's so many aspects, there's so many barriers of being told to do mm-hmm. certain sports and mm-hmm. how you have to do them. And also the whole just being told what to do. That's what that couch to 5K thing that you're talking about. Like, even if they're doing it gently, someone is still telling me what to do. The only exercise I can do is exercise that's just fun, just for the sake of having fun. So, you know, if I dance, if I do my Zumba class, something like that, where, and I even sometimes will sweat during a Zumba class and be able to tolerate it, because obviously the exhilaration and the fun is better than the sensory feeling. But it's in no shape or form to reach any kind of goal. And also, I'm not surrounded by people in a class like that, because it's all different ages, all different shapes and sizes, and everybody's having a laugh. So it's not, nobody's really there. Well, there's a couple of gym buddies, but apart from that, mm-hmm. nobody's mm-hmm. really there for that reason. So there's none of that messaging whatsoever. And then I can do it, but it's almost like it has to be about then, I want to do this because I want to dance and I want to feel what that feeling is like. And then that'll override the sensory aspects of potential sweat or overheating, but nothing else really would. But I think that that's not understood for autistic people, is, you know, how we deal with temperature changes and how uncomfortable it is when we get too hot or mm-hmm. when we sweat or any of that, anything that goes on in your body, or your heart goes too fast or anything. Like, we notice all of that, so we feel it all. Like, I know how it's affected my breathing, and I know all of that stuff. I'm not so lost in the whole thing not to notice things like that. Mm. So I feel it in every mm. part of my body when muscles are starting to get sore. Like, I yes. always feel like, oh my God, like, why are you saying you don't feel this till tomorrow? I can feel it now.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I know it's yes. going to be sore. Like, how yeah. do you not know? Are yeah. you not paying any attention to yourself actually right now? Well, clearly not, because you all say you won't feel it till tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I know what's being stretched and I know what's being pulled at the time.
Mm. And then yet another reason to be told, stop making a fuss.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. And you're barely sweating. No, but I'm fucking roasting. I don't like it.
Yes.
And I can't breathe. It's like, no, you're breathing. No, I can't breathe. Like, I can't breathe.
There's a whole thing about temperature as well.
Mm.
Temperature sensitivity. I mean, there's a kind of, it's almost the same thing really, but a related sideline about what we've been talking about, where the things that we've experienced and therefore kind of revolt against are often the things that we are very much told we should be doing. So that could be diet, could be exercise, for example. Those are the two huge ones. You know, what do you mean you won't eat healthily? For your own good. That's ridiculous. You've got, your priorities are completely...
Yeah, yeah. I just can't imagine putting anything into my body that I didn't like the taste of. And I know that that's... To me, that makes perfect sense.
Mm,
and yet, to so many people, it doesn't. Because people, you know, tend to think, yeah, but if it's good for you,
That's the balance that's just completely different for us. That is the sensitivity levels being very, very different. Most people, I'm going to completely guess at, would choose not to exercise, you know, if there was no benefit in it. They wouldn't just choose to do it. Some people would, but I'm guessing that most people don't. You know, it's a chore. It's something that you do because of the benefit, not because the actual thing is nice. Same with healthy eating for most people in this part of the world, you know.
Yeah.
But the balance is different for them. It's very different. Sure, I don't want to, you know, go without chips and have to eat salad, just to make a kind of stereotype comparison there. Mm. But it's worth it because, you know, I'm going to look better. But that's actually usually the priority more than it is health, I think. But nevertheless, if you've got different sensitivity, I always say dialed up. And, you know, I've got to stop that language because it's making that the exception. It's making that it is the outlier statistically, but it's kind of, we're othering out. I'm othering myself when I do that, actually.
Okay.
So just different. Yeah. Different levels of sensitivity to the people around me mean that they're just not going to get that I cannot tolerate a particular taste or smell. Texture when we're talking about food, I really can't.
Yeah.
And we can go back to the horrific Bovril story again. You know, that really was.
I don't think that everybody knows about the Bovril story, but I don't know if you want.
Well, I know. I don't need to go into detail other than when I was a child, I was particularly short for my stage of development. I'm a short human now, but I was very, very, very short then. And there was thinking that there might have been something wrong with me. I might have been deficient or something up with my growth hormones. I needed to have a blood test or many blood tests over a period of time where my growth hormones were activated in my blood so that they could be monitored, counted, whatever it was they were doing. And it was found at the time that a good way to stimulate growth hormones in the blood was to drink Bovril, which is a beef, gunky, bouillon kind of hot drink. It's not something I'd ever wanted to. Not something I'd ever wanted to drink, but certainly when it came to it, intolerable. I couldn't, and I was throwing it up, and all of this was on an empty stomach because it was a blood test, and it was needing to be done every hour, along with some quite vicious ways of taking blood as well. It was just the most dreadful experience. But what I wouldn't have, you know, had any under, or nobody would have had any understanding around me at the time, was that this was much more than a I don't like this taste.
Yeah.
It literally was intolerable.
Yeah.
And I now know that about a number of things.
Mm.
The smell of Parmesan cheese, anything that looks or behaves like semolina or tapioca or rice pudding. Fuck off. But it's more than a preference, is what I'm saying. You know, it's I cannot and I will run away.
Yeah,
and it will be a fight or flight response.
Yeah.
Most often.
Well, I can't cope with things in terms of what they look like on people's plates.
Without really thinking that through, I once sent you a picture, didn't I, of my lunch, and I'm going to apologise again months later. I'm so sorry.
I delete that. I think you've done it a couple of times. I'm like, stop it. There needs to be a trigger warning. In fact, just don't.
It really
even
does.
Do
no,
it.
But seriously,
do it.
But even the fact that we're kind of laughing about it now, even just between us, it's kind of not okay. It is, you know,
It's a real thing.
It can make us unwell. Properly unwell, mentally and physically.
Yeah, well, if I thought anyone had the power to actually make me eat something that I didn't want to do, it would really, really, really scare me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the thought that someone would do that, and that someone would make, it really would scare me now to think that I could be in a context that someone would tell me to do that.
Too.
You know, and it just would. And, like, you know, I suppose that's why I always would get out of going to people's houses for food or mm-hmm. like going to restaurants or mm-hmm. like, because even if they're not forcing you, there is an intense amount of pressure if you go to someone's house to eat at least part of what they put in front of you. Or even if it's just like supper, like some people will watch, and if you eat nothing, it's just not acceptable to eat nothing.
It's very, and, very familiar. Very familiar.
You know, like it just, it's an incredibly big pressure, and you it has for many years meant that I get out of everything because I just can't imagine putting myself in that position and having to do it. Like, and I know that lots of people do that. They might not actually, they might say, well, I don't really like the stuff either, Shauna, but I want to go for the social things.
But
that's I'll eat a piece of something, you know. They might say, oh, well, there's a few things there, and I look at what's most tolerable, and I'll put it on my plate and I'll eat it slowly. And I'm like, no, I couldn't even put it on my plate, and I couldn't eat it slowly.
That's
you
it.
Know, couldn't even have it on my plate and then slip it into the bin. I don't want to have it on my plate. You know, I don't want to have a plate. Mm-hmm. You know, and
I just can't do any
of that.
And that's a nice, clear, simple example of what most people just don't understand, that it's not that I have this strong preference or that you much prefer not. It's not even that. It is about tolerance. It's absolute.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, whatever the worst thing is for any of my senses, I don't have a choice about it. You know, I do with certain things. There are, you know, it's a scalable palette of experiences. And some of them, yes, I can make value judgments for that. I can tolerate this in order to X, Y, and Z. But at the far end of the scale, and this is the bit that I just don't think is understood. It isn't a possibility.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's food that is the absolute. So if food is involved, if I have to go somewhere and I have to eat, then I will not do it. You know, if it's noise, I mean, I'll go to a concert. I'll go to something loud because it's worth it. Mm-hmm. But again, that's not into my body. You know, there's
something
about the food into my body and I'm putting it in is a different thing. So I will absolutely not ever go anywhere where someone is going to feed me. Yes. I think that's really become the case for me as an adult. I just won't do it. I will go to very few restaurants and only if I know the menu and what I'm going to eat in advance. I don't think I ever really eat at someone's house unless I'm part of the cooking. So it's like a kind of a holiday. Yes. But we'll never do anything involving food. So that must be like bigger than, you know, like noise for me. But for some people, noise might be an absolute. They'll never put themselves in an environment that is too noisy or too crowded.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to bring.
I don't like the crowded either. Yeah, I don't like the crowded.
And the other argument I reckon that gets thrown at us a lot as well is that you'll get used to it.
Yeah, but I
And it's kind
don't.
Of, there is part of that argument that I think is true for me, which is that the more that I withhold myself from the things that make me really uncomfortable, then my tolerance does go down, in fact. And a good example of that, I can come back to actually, you know, family walk out in the park yesterday, was that there were people. Okay, so this is going outdoors. This is not indoors. This is not a tightly packed space. This is outdoors in the sunshine, in the fresh air. Quite a lot of people about, but we're not talking about a packed park. But what we did do was we went on a walk on a bit of something called the Parkland Walk. So there used to be a railway from one part of London to another, and it's now a country, you know, there's no railway there now. It's a country path that goes from park to park to park, and it's really nice. It was busy yesterday. So when I say busy, imagine I'm walking along. I was with five members of my family and three dogs. That was all fine. We're kind of, you know, we're kind of staggered along the path a little bit. And we probably came across somebody, you know, either overtaking or walking in the other direction, say every once a minute, maybe. So it's not like hundreds of people. Nevertheless, I did not want to go on that particular walk because it was a path. It wasn't open.
Okay.
So whoever was around was going to be close by. And I told you about this at the time. I was absolutely exhausted. I called it social exhaustion. Actually, I'm reframing that now because I wasn't having to particularly socialise except with my own family, and I can do that. Yeah. This was actually about the presence of other people and actually having to be conscious in all my senses of where people were, that I had to negotiate my way around them or not be in their way or manage my dog or one of the dogs, or you know, that was a constant hypervigilance that required constant monitoring and action for 2 hours. Looking back on it now, was the sensitivity. So I don't enjoy loud, crowded places. I love, like you, I love going to gigs. That's a completely different experience. That's a lovely overwhelm. That's a chosen, purposeful overwhelm. But the presence of lots of people who are kind of being unpredictable and that I'm just having to consciously manage in a way that I imagine most people do automatically without spending loads of energy from the
looks
of it.
But what you just said there, though, you had to manage the dogs as well, which is kind of more stressful because then you're also checking the person coming towards you. Might they be fearful of dogs? Are your dogs going to behave in a certain way? Like there's more, it's like managing children, you
kind
know,
of,
you've got to do more eye contact than you would if you were
wandering around
a park and there's not very many people around. You can zone out, you can look around you. Yes, there might be one person every however many minutes, but you know, they might look at you, they might give you eye contact, they might not, they might be off in their own wee world. But on a day that is a busy day and people are out and they're maybe happier, it's Easter, they want eye contact, they want the smiles, they want the interaction. You're also managing children and dogs.
No, you're right, and you're layering the two things together. Actually, I was kind of starting to separate, but they're both there, the social anxiety and the hypervigilance and the management. And also, both of our dogs were in distress by this point. Woody, the older one, was limping because we'd walked him
too much
and we needed to get him home. And Molly is 100% autistic and did not like lots of people
too
around.
Too many people.
There were too many people. And we just wanted to get them out of there. And again, because it was an enclosed, even though it's outdoors, but it's a pathway, you know, not fields. I don't know. All I can hear in my head, or one of the things I can hear in my head, are the neurotypical people saying all the different versions of what you're making such a fuss about. Had a nice day out. It was a nice day out. I saw my family. I walked my dogs. Everybody around as well. I mean, there's nothing like threatening. This is a posh, nice part of London where all the people are out smiling and being nice. You know, there was nothing to negotiate in that. Exactly. It's made your skin crawl, hasn't it?
Yeah. That would be the height of stress for me. Yeah. But you like pretending to be posh and out with all those people, so it doesn't make your skin crawl. I can resist.
Yeah, I know.
You do. You love it.
I do not.
He just said, this is nice, you know, it's all us posh people out together in London.
I'm sure I didn't use the word us, but I know where you're going with this, and I'm going to let it play out. All I meant was there are places that I could go walking where I wouldn't feel safe. And this is not one of those, you know. That wasn't part of the anxiety. It was that, and that's what I mean about what you're making such a fuss about. This is what I hear echoing around. The neurotypical stop making a fuss, because ostensibly to look at that situation, there was nothing unpleasant going on. It's so invisible. It's so invisible. And I'm still 30 hours later exhausted. I'm going to sleep really well tonight again, because this is your come down thing, isn't it?
Well, but let's be fair, you didn't actually sleep very well last night.
No, not great. And I think, again, I can
add... So you said you're going to sleep very well, but, you know, not. It's not like you slept very well. You were still coming down from it.
Exactly. And this is where I really relate to what you talk about when we did the episode on you going to the gig and that like 2-3 day come down, maybe more.
Uh-huh.
That is exactly what... And this is the first time... because I don't do this kind of thing that often. This is the first time that I've experienced that in awareness, that I've known at the time I am spending spoons at a rate here because of the environment, because of the amount of stimulation and people around me and vigilance that is kind of being. That's the first time that I've done that and known that it was happening at the time.
Yeah, but I'd also like to say that you're saying there was nothing and people would say, don't make a big thing. But also, there was quite a lot to navigate, and it was precisely because a lot of people weren't making a big deal and were out having fun, not being mindful of their surroundings,
that meant that those of us
that are sensitive need to.
Thank you.
And many, many, many people who take their dogs out for a walk are not that tuned in to their dog's mental health. But the fact that you are aware of how Molly and Woody were doing, mental and physical health. And it's the same with children. What I'm trying to say is that there are those of us that are tuned in to the people around us who might be struggling and then might take that in and might be a sponge for some of that. And there's other people who are ostensibly having one of their posh happy days out and may group everybody together and say, we all had a great time. But actually, if you were to check the stress hormones of all the people in that party, everybody would not be having a wonderful time.
That's right. There's so much of that that I want to immerse myself in because that was just lovely. And the other experience that I hear about all the time in my work and, you know, me, myself, in my life, is that you're told that we're going to do this nice thing. You object to it because you know you're not going to enjoy it. They say, oh, come on, if you push yourself, you'll enjoy yourself. And so a lot of the time, especially when before we're aware, we do the thing and we get through the thing and we mask very well. And what we're told at the end of, and at the end of it, we're so, so glad it's over. But we're told, there you go, you enjoyed it.
Or you did really well. or you, yeah, you did really well, or you were on good form today, or something like
Again, it's that. And that's the invisibility, isn't it? You know, it's that it's not visible. And if it, when it becomes visible, when it creeps over and leaks out into the real world, you're being unreasonable.
It's bad behavior.
You're being unreasonable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes me sad.
Right. I suppose we should say goodbye to our listeners.
Before we do, just to confirm, the sunset in Carrick, 26 minutes later than it did here.
26 minutes.
We're not that far away. That sounds to me, it's such a global kind of thing. I was really surprised. But yes, it was. It was basically half an hour between.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Autistic License podcast. You can connect with us via Instagram, Facebook at autisticlicense.com or by email at autisticlicense@gmail.com. At this point, Leo likes me to spell the word license because we spell it in different ways in different parts of the world. We spell it L-I-C-E-N-C-E. We also have a thriving Facebook community. You can search for Autistic License Shauna and Leo on Facebook, or you can click on the link in the show notes.